Well, it's an important summit in very many ways. Firstly, because of what is happening currently on our continent as a result of geopolitical shifts that are taking place, where we're seeing the continent has become a scramble for international actors who are interested in developmental progress of the continent, but also for other non-developmental interests on the continent. We're talking of big economies like the United States of America, Russia, and China, who already have a significant footprint on African development, and other interests are not so really linked to development. And we see Japan is coming in at a time also when it also wants to be seen as an active player in African development agenda outside of the four main states that have already have a footprint. So Japan is offering an alternative platform for investor diversification, if I put it that way, and also coming across as a partner who is interested in regional partnerships within the continent. So because as you see the configuration of the heads of states who are already participating at the summit at the moment, they each belong to different economic regions of the continent, saying that there is a little bit to do with individual country interests, and there's also something to do with the regional interests. Regional meaning like, you know, East African Cooperation, South African Development Community, and the ECOWAS. But there is a very strong country to Japan relationship, bilateral relationship, that this summit is bringing forth. So overall, I think what Japan is looking into is to say that they can also offer something to the continent, but what they're doing is to create a platform for shared deliberations and conversations around what can they do together that is mutually beneficial for Japan as a country and as an investor and for individual African countries. The only one disadvantage here that I would put is that African states have gone there as individual countries rather than African Union members.
Yeah. And on that note as well, Doctor, when considering the influence of Japan in Africa, I found it quite interesting that Japan doesn't have as much investment in Africa in comparison to its rival in Asia, China. And I'm trying to wonder exactly why that has been the case in terms of lack of investment.
There has been a discussion around what Japan wanted to do pre-COVID-19. There was a momentum towards strengthening Japanese investment on the continent, again, following the same road that they're trying to put in now around individual country negotiation or bilateral cooperations. But COVID-19 really did blow that kind of arrangement out of order. And the prime minister then was very concerned about how he could build that relationship intentionally with individual countries based on mutually agreed, partnership and development agenda. Having that, the Japan also has gone through its political shift as a country since then, they are trying to resurface now again the same agenda that is now with new players, meaning there is a new prime minister that is now driving this agenda. But there's also new African leaders that have come on board that are also now trying to, to prosper this conversation. That gap between the pre-COVID to where we are now in 2025 kind of dissipated the interest of investing, because both countries, I mean, Japan and the countries in Africa, they had this one big agenda at the time in between, and that was to mitigate the effects of COVID-19 on their citizenry. And so resources were redirected to health mitigation strategies to curb the effects, at the same time also to improve their health system so that they can become more resilient in case future pandemics do, come up again. So they are trying to go back now to the original pre-COVID agreements, where there was already an initiation by the Prime Minister of Japan then to create collaborative opportunities to drive investments. I think the timing is perfect. Japan and African states went through that difficult period and they emerged stronger. And so I think the conversation now is more targeted because now there is a real concrete agenda items on the table. First of them, of course, is how to mitigate for future health pandemics that both Japan and African states were found wanting. The whole country was prepared, how to handle such a significant, health scare And so there is a discussion around collaboration on issues of health and mitigation of pandemic preparedness. Secondly, there is now new emerged measures that were not previously in view at the pre-COVID situation. Things like renewable energy were not available then for a discussion. But because of the increased climate change challenges in both Japan and on the continent, there is now the agenda on the table on how can they work together to support each other's mitigation against the effects of climate change, and how can Japan invest in the green renewable energies on the continent, which now the continent is providing very powerful sustainable models that can support green energy investment in real terms that can be measured in terms of impact. Other areas that have come through post-pandemic, of course, is around issues to do with, you know, connectivity and technological investments in both Japan and in Africa. The whole issue around what technology can do and the innovativeness that is around there is closely linked to economic growth, and it's also linked to diversification of sectors where technology and the emerging technologies can be directly deployed. And we know that Japan is one of the countries that is leading with technological innovation. Yeah. So Africa is presenting a very powerful value proposition for the country to invest in this area that will add a lot of value to both economies in Japan and economies in Africa. And linked to that is job creation. We know that the continent has a very youthful demography. That is almost 30 to 40% of this youth are highly unemployed, and is across the continent, whichever country you pick. Young people, now we even get into a place where we have graduates, young people that are not able to even get to employment. Not that they lack, necessary education like it was probably 15, 20 years ago. Now we have now a combination of youth employment that is linked to skilled, but they cannot get a job, and also are trying to get to skilling levels, for example, into universities. And one thing we know that Japan has been very generous towards this continent, offering various kinds of scholarships that African youth can be able to take advantage of and be able to, you know, through these bilateral relations, gain some access to Japan's higher education sector, get skills that are really targeted to African development based on the bilateral relations. So you can see the architecture of this conversation is now around new areas of cooperation. And of course, the last one I would like to mention is on how to cooperate in terms of security threats, because as you know, our continent has not been spared on these issues. And it's very important that any investor would want to know that their capital is protected and there is a guarantee of the return on investment. And you can only do this in conditions of peace and stability on the continent. Mm.
What I find really interesting, Doctor, is this renewed or greater focus on the African continent, because it seems as if though we are now a hot commodity on the world stage, because ever since the introduction of the United States tariffs, I've seen articles about how China is trying to strengthen its ties to Africa, how Southeast Asian nations are trying the same, and of course now Japan as well. It seems as if though Africa as a whole is now in a great position to further its economic growth.
I agree with you 100%. We're in such a powerful position as a continent as opposed to other, you know, regions around the world, because we have so much to offer, which that's why you can see this increased flurry of intentionality from developed countries to wanting to do business with Africa as a continent, but also as individual countries. And I think what this privilege also provides for the continent is to start coming to talk together as a unit rather than as individual countries when we get to negotiate developmental agenda. I think this is so I'm happy to note that at least the African Union is represented in this summit, but it is more strongly what will work out is to see that the African Union takes the lead in saying this is what the continent is in need of right now. And we are now going to negotiate as equal partners, not like beggars. You know, we've not come to with a begging bowl to ask us, give us money for this and give us money for the other, and then get all these horrific, stringent conditions that are attached to that kind of financial investment. We're in a powerful position as a continent when we speak from one voice, from a stronger position of saying, we have the resources that we would like to leverage, but also we want to enter this conversation as one. Let me just borrow one example. And I think earlier this week we saw how the European Union came together to support Ukraine, for example, when they went to meet President Trump. It was a powerful picture. And when I saw that, I was thinking, why can't our African Union do the same? Why can't we go there as a unit, African Union speaking, supported by African heads of state? What we are seeing currently is the exact opposite. We are seeing individual African countries negotiating their, their business, and the African Union is behind. I think I would like to see it. I would suggest we almost all Africans would want to say the opposite. We want to see the African Union leading and speaking about the economic and development agenda of the continent, supported by the heads of state.
Yeah.
I think that's what we'd like to see, because that puts us in a powerful position in terms of negotiating what kind of development we want to see, who do we want to work with as a continent to support this development, and of course, in the process, bring this unity that has been so elusive on our continent. And it's important that we take advantage of these platforms and other platforms that we like this, when we can still have the opportunity to leverage our potential and promote African leadership that is a cohesive one, and also make sure that our resources are not abused, so that the beneficiation is truly centered on African people and not on the investors.
Yes.
Because we really suffered as a continent on that negotiation. We find that investors who are investing on our continent are depleting their resources, and African people who should be owning their wealth are left more impoverished than before the investors found them. We can only correct that image and that reality on the ground when we ensure that we negotiate in the best interest of African people, having African citizenry at the center of the conversation.
Indeed. Doctor, before I let you go, we know that Japan has been pushing for quite some time for the free and open Indo-Pacific plan. And of course, we know they included some African states back in 2016. I want to know from you in that respect, given that plan, given this, given the TICAD, how do you view the future of Japanese investment into the African continent?
My view is that I see there is a genuine interest from the Japanese government to want to engage with the African continent on an equal partner basis. From the all the indications I've read and seen and followed some of the discussion, there is no doubt in mind that there is pure genuine interest by the Japanese government to ensure that it engages the continent on the basis of an equal partner. Now, what will come out of this summit will tell us whether that will be the way to go forward. Because one would want to on the side that this genuine desire is also followed by genuine commitment, that in the sense that if they commit X amount of millions to support the continental agenda based on the discussion they've had with different countries and all that, it will be translated into action. What we have not seen so far from other discussions is that there has been an issue of once the talk show is over, the financial commitment is also over. You know, it was good for the paper or for the news, but after that, there is no transmission of that, X amount of investment that was promised and maybe made noise around. I would want to believe that Japanese government is genuinely interested in walking the talk, that after this summit, whatever they commit to do with the individual countries of the continent and with the African Union Commission, they will be able to translate that into action. If you say you're going to put X amount of millions of dollars towards green energy and renewable energy, then money will follow like yesterday. When you say you are going to commit to industrialization and improving manufacturing on these particular areas of interest, money must follow. That has been the missing link, and I have no doubt the Japanese government want to go this route with that integrity that is actually supported by action. Otherwise, they need to become another expensive talk show that does not add value to the continental agenda.
Indeed. Doctor, unfortunately, it's all the time we have. However, I want to say thank you for coming online and having this discussion with us.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Never a problem. That was Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director of the Democracy Development Program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and convener at the Africa Policy Circle.